just chatting with Alan Reynolds. When you were a younger man, did you at any time sort of have pretensions eventually of thinking, I wouldn't mind writing a book?
Yeah, I'd always written, even as in school. Okay. I enjoyed writing a lot, but the career got in the way, really.
Yeah, well.
So for 40 years, you went on the back burner, but I've always written.
Right, okay. And the story, as I understand it, sort of came about through a friendship that you had with a co-worker there in the solicitor's office.
That's right. I was a young man, about 21 years of age.
Right.
And right in the basement, there was an elderly clerk, and he had a clipped accent and a clipped moustache, and he was from Southern Africa.
Okay.
So I started talking to him, and then he regaled me with his stories of life out in Southern Africa, in Northern Rhodesia.
And this was what, in the sort of mid-50s, late-50s?
Yes, that's right. In fact, his wife came from Cardiff, and they came back to Cardiff then in the late-60s.
Right.
And then he worked in this office then in the late-70s, early-80s.
Yes, yeah.
And he was part of the catalyst for the book.
So he was basically regaling you with stories of life in Southern Africa.
Yeah.
And that must have been very, very romantic because, I mean, clearly a world away in every sense from Cardiff.
Yeah, you worked on the railways and he spoke about fresh avocados, fresh coffee, sun was always shining and... that was his life, but he had to return for various family reasons.
Yeah.
But it wasn't all roses and bougainvillea.
So he must have been a real inspiration from all points of view, because with due respect, as a youngish man who's come up from West Wales to Cardiff and plying your trade as a junior solicitor, to be listening to stories from somebody that had been involved in the great outdoors, working on, as you say, on the build. Was he helping to sort of actually build the railways, or was he more involved just with the administration?
On the
right.
But he did open a whole world for me, and I can see him now with that clipped moustache and sun-bronzed hair. Yes, he was an inspiration for the book.
So just give people a little teaser then about the whole idea behind the book.
The book starts and ends in Cardiff, really.
Right.
And it's narrated by somebody called Daisy, who's a local woman who lives in Northern Rhodesia, current Zambia.
Yeah.
And it's about the struggle, really, against colonialism.
Okay.
And there's a small expat Welsh community there, and they all kind of mingle together. And there's a big question there is, where do they belong?
Mm-hmm.
Do they belong in Africa? Do they belong in Wales? Are they Rhodesian? What are they? And the conflict between these various people. And also there's an interesting situation with Daisy and a married couple, and the three of them have relationships together.
Okay.
And that is in the mix as well.
Right. So it's clearly a human interest story on every level, but set in somewhere very, very exotic.
That's right, yes. And that adds to it, actually, because there's this issue about who rules the country, who should rule the country, what should you do, and that backdrop then is an excellent dramatic backdrop to the situation between these three characters.
Understood. So you've obviously very cleverly been able to weave all of this together, as you say, against what must have been, and still is, a stunning backdrop. I mean, it's the most wonderful part of the world. Mm. But clearly tensions also were running very high in a political sense, as probably as well as in a personal sense, with the characters in the book.
Yeah, that's why it was set in the 50s when the winds of change are beginning to blow in that part of the world.
Right.
And it does lend to the dramatic quality in the book. But that's the kind of the macro, that's the large-scale view. But the small-scale view is these three people interacting together.
Yes, yes.
You know, what should they be doing? Should they even be interacting? Because there's a difficult situation at the time. And that adds to the whole story, I think.
Let's go into a little bit more depth about the main sort of characters and the backdrop to it all. So, Cleaning Fire, what really, you know, is the story to it?
Okay, that the backdrop is the struggle, really, for independence, for freedom from colonialism.
Yes.
And it's looked through the eyes of Daisy. She's a local Bemba woman, and she narrates the whole book. And she lives with a person called Gwyn, and that relationship is a housekeeper stroke something more.
Right.
And then he works on the railways with, well, it's a racist person called Jabbers.
Mm-hmm.
And they try to keep their relationship quiet as a housekeeper relationship, but it is more than that. And then for various reasons, Gwyn's, I won't say too much, but Gwyn's brother gets involved with a local Welsh girl called Delith,
mm-hmm.
gets her pregnant, and then Gwyn has to do the decent thing by marrying this woman to save the family's blushes.
Right.
So the three of the men live in the same house in northern Rhodesia, and the matter develops then as they discuss politics, but they also discuss what are we three? Are we three friends? Are we three lovers? Are we three politicians? Should we even be together? So that works into this anti-colonialism issue then. So it's to do with violence, threat, freedom, who we are, what we want to be,
mm-hmm.
And it develops throughout the whole book then.
Because obviously, Southern Africa, not just Northern Rhodesia as was, but obviously South Africa itself and the various other countries around that southern part of the continent, was looked upon very much as somewhere for a lot of white settlers to go to make their fortune and almost to import the British way of life on whoever happened to be where they ended up. I mean, it was there were really no ifs or buts, were they? I mean, it was assumed, well, the white settlers will come in and they will show the way.
I suppose the main question is colonialism ever justified? You know, can one European culture just descend on a totally different culture in Southern Africa and say, right, this is the way you should be doing things. These are the rules now. You should listen to us. In my opinion, that is totally unsustainable.
Of course, of course.
So people have the right to decide their own path, be it right or wrong. They might make a complete hash of it, but at least it's their mistakes they're doing. They're not imposed by others.
So obviously, this whole concept becomes very rich and fertile ground for a novel, because in a way it's stories which have been told many, many times about people who have gone, and again, of course, whether it's Africa or whether it's India, other parts of Asia, etc., etc., but this whole principle of, as you say, colonialism, where the incoming people feel, well, look, this is it, it's non-negotiable, this is how to do it, and then how that interacts with the local people. And sadly, of course, so often does end in violence.
Yeah, it creates friction, which is, I suppose, what you want in any novel. There's a menace in the book all the time. There's something's going to happen here.
Yeah, yes.
And most of it is not very good. But there's also a slant here as well of Welsh nonconformism.
Right.
Because these people go to chapel in this little town called Broken Hill. And the issue then of how does Christianity work itself into colonialism. It's the Bible and the bullet.
Yes.
And some of them are very upstanding chapel people at one level, but they still believe that they should, as it were, lord it over the locals. And that's an interesting issue as well, because who does make the rules? Who is in control? Who calls the shots?
And obviously, giving it that Welsh slant as well is really interesting, because quite obviously, Welsh people are not the same as English people in many respects.
No. No.
But put into that sort of foreign alien type setting of being in Southern Africa, I guess, you know, inevitably you were going to see Welsh people inevitably mimicking exactly what the English settlers were doing.
Yeah, I come from a strong kind of chapel upbringing in West Wales, and in those days, Sunday was sacrosanct. No kicking of a ball, best shoes on, best suit on.
Yes,
but there's also this, I don't know, hidebound issues here. If the Bible says this, then that's correct. But there are some people who say, well, hang on now. If the Bible says that the white man rules over the black man, that can't be right. So it's part of this friction which was happening all the time in that part of the world, and how these people's Welshness then reacted to that. Because, again, were they Welsh? Were they British? Were they colonials? Were they Africans?
Mm.
So there was these issues then rumbling around in their minds all the time, all the time, all the time.
So basically, that is the premise for the whole book, really. And so it's a journey that we go on with the three central characters. Clearly, I don't want you to give away, the end of the book to tell us how it finishes, because obviously that's for people to find out at a later date. But I mean, is it in any shape or form satisfactory, or like so many things in life, is it all just messy from start to finish?
It is messy. The reason I used the term cleaning fire was. On the railways in those times, they were steam railways, and they had to have water every 80 miles or so to refresh the steam.
Yes.
And it's a cleaning fire, so the fire destroys everything, kills everything, but it also cleans everything at the same time.
Right, right.
So that there's this menace in the book of you won't develop, you won't get what you want, you won't get your freedom without somebody having a very hard time.
Mm. So, Alan, we've got the premise of it all, the relationships, the tensions that existed in this part of colonial Africa. So just give us a little idea, a little taster again, of some of the storyline, the plot line then, as it goes through the book.
Yeah, a lot of these men, these navvies, they're hard-bitten, they work on the railways in northern Rhodesia, and there's a mishmash of people there. They're these Welsh expats, the local Bemba people, but there are also three people from China there and three people from Gujarati in India.
Okay.
So these cultures then mix, and there are different viewpoints on all these things. People from China left China because Japan was attacking China. They wanted to be away from those bullets, but then they came into this environment where they were probably the lowest of the low. Then you had the Gujarati, the Indians, how they react. And then there's this one central figure called Jabez, who is an out-and-out racist.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a foreman on the railways.
Yes.
He works these people to the bone, and there are various things happening out on site. Health and safety are obviously non-existent. And things happen there which affect the navvies. And part of the narrative is, how do all these people from different cultures get their revenge on this person, which they do in the end.
It seems to me that it's the sort of book that will be enjoyed by people on various levels, because clearly the whole escapism aspect of Welsh people being in southern Africa around what was a momentous time is fascinating. Clearly, the interaction of the main characters, their relationships, is another story level again. And then obviously bringing it all together, as we said, against this backdrop, a tumultuous backdrop, just seems to me to make for some really, really fabulous fiction.
Yeah, you used a good word earlier, a journey, because it was a journey for me as well, because
right.
I created these characters, they didn't exist before, and the journey I was on is how do I make a book which is interesting, but also says something about the condition of these people in the 1950s in their own country.
Yes.
And all these different nationalities, personalities, how they melded together to create a dramatic effect. But the overarching thing for me was to say, colonialism is wrong. It is not a good thing. Well, I had this gentleman who worked with me in the solicitor's office.
Yeah.
But as somebody else then, she was much younger, and she lived there as well, but she sadly passed away. But she gave me some ideas as well of the background of the of the infilling, if you want, because the dramatic thing is, I suppose, the easiest thing to do, but the backfilling, the trees, the animals, the birds, the weather, the smells, that's part of creating a background or making something feasible and true, really.
Well, absolutely, because otherwise, as you say, you've just got the main story and not a lot then around it. But clearly, if people have been able to assist with sort of telling you and giving you an idea of the sights, the sounds, the smells of the area, that really helps to make it very, very authentic.
Mm. There's one fascinating person in the book called Thomas. He's a railway clerk, and he's a bright man, and Gwyn gives him some books. Of course, they're all European books. And there's a scene in the book where Thomas tells Gwyn, well, thanks for these books, they're European books, but there's truth in books, Gwyn says, but it's the European truth, it's not my truth.
Yeah, clever stuff. I guess, obviously, the book has taken you many, many years to bring together, because I don't doubt for one minute that you'll say, well, it wasn't something you just thought, I just want to write a book and get it out in 5 minutes. You've clearly made it a bit of a lifetime's work.
It is. It's don't be pretentious here, but it is taking a lot of work. I had a lot of help from Candy Jar, the publishers.
Yes.
An excellent person called Tom Rees, who helped me with the editing.
Okay.
And we went back and forth to try and create something which would be readable, but didn't lose its punch or its impact either.
Yeah. And obviously, being a first-time author, clearly you needed a little bit of guidance, I guess, as to, you know, not to go down too many side roads, etc., because otherwise, clearly, it was going to be far too sprawling.
I always remember that I'd written one part, which took me about a couple of days, explaining a Winchester gun, and it went to Tom, the editor, and he came back with red lines through all of it.
And
he said, well, why do you do that, Tom? It's taken me hours to do this. Well, he doesn't add to the story, he says.
Yeah.
It always helps to get somebody outside of the author who can see things objectively and say, well, the reader won't want to know that.
It's a fair point. It is an absolutely fair point because, as you say, you can be too close to a project. Yeah. No two ways about it.
Absolutely.
I think anybody that's got involved in any project will realise that, but particularly with writing.
Yeah.
And it does need somebody then that absolutely is fearless, who will turn around or indeed send a manuscript back with a big red line through some of it. And, I mean, the great thing, though, then, is that you have to learn, don't you, to take that on the chin and get
absolutely,
on with it.
Yeah. Well, he was the expert, and it's like, this is my baby, Tom, don't destroy it. But he was always uplifting, helpful, cajoling, and he was never arrogant or condescending.
No.
I found that very, very useful. Brilliant. So I would advise anybody who writes a book to get an editor.
Yes.
It is absolutely crucial.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the book is available on Amazon. It's also available through Candy Jar. It is certainly, I think, a book that would be ideal for people who just want a really good read, because you've clearly gone into lots of these areas in depth. It's telling people about a part of the world that maybe not that many people will know about. And I guess now that you've got it actually out in print, you must feel very proud of what the work you've done.
Yeah, it's been a lot of work, and it's done, it's dusted, it's there, so people can read it or not as they wish, and it was worth the effort, I think.
Brilliant. So, obviously, at the moment you're helping to publicise the book, but do you feel that there's another novel in you somewhere?
Yes, I think there is, but I need a little break after this one.
Yes,
because it's taking so much out of me. And
absolutely that.
But it's not easy writing.
No, fair point. Well, Alan, thank you so much for coming in this morning. Great talking to you. I will certainly plug the book again in the last half an hour of the show and tell people where they need to go to get hold of it. But thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.